pig.
But as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partner are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
People's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine become so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
And good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Hello, hello, hello to everyone out there. You are listening to Revolution Radio. And this is Spirit Talk with Lizzie, and I'm your host, Lizzie. Hello, everyone. Don't forget, please join in, because we do so love to have you here with us in chat room. So please do come in and join us, because we do love having you here. And become a patron and do join in with sharing into keeping this wonderful radio going by going to the store, get yourself some goodies, get someone some goodies, press that donation button, go to the archives. They are free. And just as the archives, they are there 24/7 for you, as so are we, because we do this with love for you. Indeed, this is a labor of love. And yes, all of us, we do our sharing just with that, a lot of love. And we do love, love, love being here. I will shortly go into the visitors room to say hello to everyone. And I have got with me today Dean. Hello, Dean. Say hello. And just before I go into the visitors room, so he's joining me today. Hello. on the show.
Good to be here.
Yay! Hello, Dean. So just before we start, I'll quickly just go through the visitors list, and then we'll go into this roller coaster ride. Okay. Hello, 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 everyone. Hello, Factor Theory Live. Udge. I am. Hold on. And I lost it. And I have to, I got it again. I am, and Mew, that is me, the beautiful eagle flower, Boy Solomon, ID Update, Mer Bailey, Gare Bear, Mona Rattler, Mitzi, Monster, Stardust Man, Batsman, Jim Bob, Wall-E, Cat Dog Girl, Texas Red, Dirt Engineer, Crystal, Saib 2121, The Beautiful Mazed, Zizix, Simply Red 777, The Wonderful One and Only Mr. Rowe, Misty Lou, Comet, Melia, Mad, The One and Only and Most Wonderful Mr. Pat Rabbit, Choppy Water, Blessing, and E in the Kitchen. And okay, all right, because I had to click on something here. Nezomania, Beautiful Popsicle Toes, Dry Fly Guy, Cowgirl, Zebra Stripes, Sneak 1965, Capfred, Saul Rosenberg, here a few seconds ago, and they probably will pop back in. So hello, 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 and welcome to everyone listening in the background. And everyone listening but here in chat room, as always, many hugs, much love to everyone listening in the background somewhere out there in this big wide world, and here in chat room as always. So hello, hello, and thank you for joining me. Dean, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm well.
Good, 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 good. It's an up and down world, isn't it? It's one day we're good, next day we're so-so, the day after that one, we don't even know. It's a very up and down world and very up and down situation at the moment, and it affects us all.
I know it affects my sleep pattern from time to time.
Yes, it's affecting so many people's sleep patterns and even their life, you know, because we stepped out of the comfort zone that we knew. And the comfort zone, not even being necessarily a comfort zone, but it is what we knew. So we kind of tend to call it that comfort zone, you know. And because at least we knew, you know, that good or bad, we kind of knew it. We moaned about it. Most of us always wishing and talking about change. And change can be a bit... change can be very challenging. Specific, this change is very challenging because it's been brought on with a lot of doubt, a lot of fear, a lot of things that we don't even know how to deal with. And the fear is one thing that I did speak on and about last Sunday, but today I want to also speak of a little bit fear and a little bit of the superstition. because superstition also carries a lot of fear. And so we start with this kind of stuff and branch off into areas of it and from it, and let's see where that takes us on. And do feel free to step in anytime, Dean. but yeah, I do see fear as it is something that is there for a reason, you know. It's a feeling, yeah, it's there for a reason. It can be helpful. Fear can help to kick in certain chemical, you know, biological stuff that makes you run faster and makes you be stronger. In fear, your body reacts different. Your mind reacts different. But also, in fear, people do the most disastrous things. Because in fear, yes, your body kicks into those reactions of run and get away. Or sometimes it's not to run and get away. Sometimes you freeze. You're so scared you freeze and you don't do anything at all. And you become like stunned. So fear can do these kind of things. In the animal kingdom, fear is absolutely central. Being it, for example, a deer, for example. I mean, many of these grazing animals, their senses are incredibly acute, you know, their the vibrations, the sound, the smell, all of those senses are incredibly sharpened. And because the grazing family, rabbits, deers, all these sort of animals, they have to be wary of the ones that eat them. So it makes sense for them to have that fear and to have all of these senses super acute and super sharp, to the point that a twig sometimes is enough for them to stop eating. And the next movement or smell they sense that relates to a predator, they're off. You know, they start jumping back and forth and running. They go into a reactive mode without thinking, because they don't have to think. They have to act out. They go bang, run, you know, and they get super strong and super fast, and they zigzag, they do all these things to try and avoid to try and avoid a predator. And so I'm talking, for example, about a singular animal, but if you talk about a herd can be incredibly strong when they're running away. And a herd, what happens is the first start running, the rest of the herd will follow them. So they're doing all of this without thinking. Earlier on, we were talking about this, Dean and I. And I actually mentioned about I think it's the bison, isn't it, in America, many years ago.
Buffalo.
Many years ago, one of the hunting techniques would be, you know, they would be circled. And if they were by a cliff, that would be a very easy way of getting enough food for winter and fur and this, that, and the other. So they would trigger a stampede of these amazing, beautiful animals that even a group of man, a big group of man, would only capture, you know, a few, but for the whole village and for winter, possibly, what they would do is they would stampede. Get the herd to get so scared they would stampede, and they would stampede, and they would be pushed, directed, as to say, towards the cliff. So they would fall off the cliff. So it would be less effort for the warriors, for the people that were trying to capture, because you know, for survival for these people, the less effort, for them, on capturing these big animals. They're feisty as well, you know, they would go at you in self-defense, but like this, they would all follow the herd and go down the cliff. And for the ones in the middle and left behind, because they're blindly following, they're blindly stampeding, everyone would just go whoops off the cliff, you know, into a certain dead, or some would survive. But this was one of the ways that people used to use to group a herd of animals, not necessarily only these, but other animals as well, for them to capture a big load. Now, why am I saying this? Because humans behave like that too. humans behave like that too in many situations. If you think about it through the years, how many times have you heard of big disasters? And there's a big party, a big gig, big concert, you know, and something happens. And because something happens, people start behaving like the animal. And they start running, and often when they start running, the eyesight captures the hearing captures where most people are running towards, and at that point they stop thinking. They stop using other senses that we have that are absolutely important for our survival. Okay, so they start going with the rest of the herd, even though we don't like to call ourselves herds, but when we behave like that, we are just like that. And we trample it over each other. A lot of people will be trampled upon, regardless of age, you know, gender. And, you know, if you fall over in a stampede of people, you will get trampled. I've seen that so many times. You know, when there's news of something like that, a big stampede of people. And sometimes they're all actually running into a bottleneck situation where it creates even more chaos, and people die because they're getting squashed, and a variety of things like that. Was if you stand back for a few seconds, a few split seconds, and feel, you know, get to know yourself and feel within you, think, use that adrenaline that fear gives you, use it for your own benefit to see, do I run with a herd or do I stand in my own knowledge and walk the other way? Or step aside, or don't do anything and see where to go. Because that is the thing. That is the thing that actually we humans have, yeah, is we can actually do that. We have been given all these amazing tools, yeah, awareness, the capability of thinking, feeling, and to use the fear for our own advantage rather than behave like prey. Does this make sense? Am I explaining it in a good way?
I think so. I mean, the weird thing about fear is that a lot of it seems to be biological, chemical. And this was made apparent to quite a well-known guy who's into self-defense in the UK from many years ago. Mm-hmm. And he actually said you had to be put into a situation of fear because of all the chemicals that it's dumping out into your body multiple mm-hmm. times over before you can actually defend yourself against someone that's a legitimate threat at any kind of level that's acceptable, would have been acceptable to him. And so in a way that fear is beyond an emotional thing. It takes you chemically. And I think it's something to do with being risk adverse, like say flight or fight. Mm-hmm. And I think the human fear seems to be geared heavily towards flight rather than fight. And there's a psychological level to fear, but there's also a type of fear that isn't psychological. So he was saying how essentially someone completely capable and physically dominant who hasn't felt chemical level fear, like where you get that dump. He says it just negates what they are as a human physically. Because they're not they're not used to being drugged up, basically. So the idea is that someone threatens you in a way that you're convinced, that shocks you into a state of fear. So it's almost like the bark is greater than the bite on a human. And it's like downing tons of painkillers or alcohol until you're drunk out of your mind. To the someone that's not waiting for it. Do you see what I mean? You're just you're drunk with fear.
Yes. And so, fear can be detrimental. Fear can be detrimental. But it also, if you know yourself, for example, and this is where I always keep talking about, and
So this does actually lead somewhere. So under that state of fear, once we accept that there's this chemical level of fear that's beyond just a psychological fear, you can start to realize that in that drugged up state that you're not used to experiencing, how easy is it for you to lose yourself and under the intoxication of fear, not actually reason correctly and be led by fear, such as what's been happening with the pandemic. You lose the ability to think logically and you're just thinking basically in an instinctual way, which is what you've been explaining through your explanation with the buffalo.
Absolutely. And this is why, you know, what the ancients have given us, the ancients are very, very wise, and what they have given us were hints. They gave us hints, which was actually, those hints are still alive and well in so many books and so much information that we can pick up and then work on ourselves. Because the meditation, the prayer, the stillness, the go within is so important, because that is what makes us different from the stampeding with our thought to the within peace that shines outward, so within as without, because your within peace shines outward, and what happens then is your reaction is not a fear reaction, it's an informed reaction. So you're not stampeding with the crowd, suddenly you make a difference. You are acting out. You are acting out of awareness rather than reacting out of fear. Yeah.
I would agree.
And that a bit like the warriors would have done. A group of warriors set up in, they would have strategically set themselves in different places. So they would scare the buffalo and just with a few noises, they wouldn't need much effort. Just with a few noises, they would scare them and direct them into one direction. Yeah? And it does not take a lot, because strategy is amazing, and if you think about it and then put it into a bigger scale, and then you can see how humans can be triggered just like that and herded into a direction without thought, but with a lot of fear. And that fear will carry them together into, you know, the slaughterhouse, into, you know what I mean, a bit like the animals would, you know. And in that slaughter, they also stampede over each other. And the stampede can be arguments, can be anything, or can be true stampede, like we see in some of these festivals when there's, you know, something goes wrong and, you know, people really truly get stampede. So the awareness... Go on.
I saw a classic example of fear purely through words today. In the news cycle of the media in the UK, okay. I was looking at a news feed of different media outlets, and on the same day, two stories ran in parallel. One was, we've vaccinated 75% of the UK adult population. Which was a type of brag in your face.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was, we have seen as much deaths now as what there was in March. And so between the two extremes and force in the words that are being used. So one is kind of like bragging in your face. Look at us, we've vaccinated 75% of you. And the other one is, all the deaths are all up as the same as March before any of that began.
Mm.
If you're under a sense of fear, you will add those two stories together in your mind and say to yourself, if I'm not vaccinated, I better hurry up. And I should still be scared. And if you can move past the fear, you think, hang on a minute, they've vaccinated 75% of adults, and yet the deaths are like they were at the peak of their pandemic that they've been trying to control for us.
Mm.
That's strange. But you won't think like that if you're under fear.
No,
if you let the fear from the messages sink into you.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because that's exactly what fear does. It kicks in a different reaction. Unless if you work on yourself, if you know thyself. When you know yourself, you're not... just know your strengths, you know your weaknesses, and your weaknesses are not something to be ashamed of. Once you know them, you embrace them, and you actually can use them, you know, including fear, which fear is not a weakness, it's a tool, but you can use it to your own advantage, yes? And any weakness you can work on, you should never stamp yourself down. All of us have got weaknesses, and some of our weaknesses become our strengths. It's just about being able to learn about who we are. Know thyself, you know, and you begin within and without, above and below. I keep saying this because it is important. And the same way as some people will go on and rant the same negative thing again and again, I'll rant and say the same positive thing again. Because
well, they can actually... Sorry, they can actually be a follow-up to fear as well, with how your mind thinks and how your how you process information. So the first step to what I described might be, I'm in fear and I better get a vaccination if I've had one. But the next step after that, even if you think, hang on a minute, 75% of adults are vaccinated, but they're saying the deaths have risen up to what it was in March when it was the worst.
Mm-hmm.
That must mean that the 25% that aren't vaccinated are dropping like flies. When you think about it, when you knew all along that it's going to be spread across the population and mostly vulnerable people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to think like that. You're going to, because I've already heard people say, and brought questions up at my workplace, what about people that are unvaccinated that are near me at work? When they've already talked about the fact that you can shed this virus if you are vaccinated or not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this classic fear thing. It's funny that we happen to be in times at the moment that relates to this, because otherwise you'd be looking for an example that a lot of people are aware of.
Absolutely. And the fear is on both sides. On both sides of the spectrum. Also, because, you know, the unknown enters into that greatly, because the fear of the unknown, is actually a very big fear in humanity. I've always reacted to the fear of the unknown a little bit OTT, in my opinion. You don't know. Ooh, it could be nasty. And because we don't know, and because we get so much information at the same time, but all the information that we are getting, it's still a don't know.
I think you're right. I think what I was trying to say earlier, and then jumping back to what you're saying, is that you start with fear, and when you produce the decision or illogical thought process that's been conjured up by fear, you then start defending that thought process or shifting it onto another argument instead of taking a step back. And then as you said, when you get to the place of fear, well, you carry on anyway.
No, you can keep going. But I just think, you know, fear has many different levels, many different names, from the time of the ancients till now. Fear has always been something that has been used.
I think fear of the unknown, which is what you were saying, fear of the unknown is actually a classic example of fear for a reason in nature, mm-hmm. in the material side of things rather than the psychological side of things, mm-hmm. in that if you break down fear of the unknown, it makes a lot of sense prior to the modern age of civilization, because mm-hmm. you think, if you're not scared of the unknown per se, what are the mistakes that you could make in nature when you're away from the cushion of civilization? Well, you could be in a sandy place or a rocky place, and you could stick your hand in a hole or a crevice in nature, and there could be a mammal in there. It could be a forest rat or a poisonous snake or anything, because you can't see what's in those rocks in that hole that you've stuck mm-hmm. your hand in to fumble around and see. It's that inquisitive nature. You're not scared of going into the big forest, which is one of the classic themes of the fairy tales, the grim fairy tales from Eastern Europe. And you can soon get lost in a large forest. Think of the Black Forest in Germany that you're not aware of, you haven't been to, because you find that you lose landmarks, everything looks the same eventually. Because you're not aware of the land, you're not traversing the same lands. Even if you're in touch with nature, that's a classic, getting lost in the forest that you're not familiar with.
Absolutely. And one of the big fears that still exists in many people, and it's not just children, it's grown-ups too. A lot of people are scared of the dark, nighttime.
Yes. That,
you know, it's fear of the dark.
You can't see predators.
The night outside is like, oh, but it's dark, you know. And it's the same as what was there during the day, except a few different birds, a few different animals, and it's dark. But it's nothing necessarily nefarious. But there's this fear, you know, that looms over people. And there's a lot of people that never overcome this fear.
Water is a good one, isn't it? So,
So
again, how many times have you jumped into a lake or a nice clear river, if you're lucky enough to live in a place with a clear river, and maybe go in the ocean, and you know that you can have a great time in there and it's fine. But at the same time, we've all heard stories of friends of a friend, etc., that have been caught by an invisible undercurrent. And drowned to death.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So there is always been that fear of plunging into the deep water, especially if you can't see into the water.
Absolutely. I personally have a little fear. It's actually a little fear, but I call it a little fear because I don't expose myself to it. But I do not like to go in the sea at night. I love swimming in the sea. But there's a something about the ocean at nighttime.
The abyss.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's dark. It's just dark. And I know it makes no sense. You know, but I just don't like it. I don't like it. And it is a fear. It is a phobia. And I do know where it comes from with me. I do know where it comes from. And this fear comes from when I was very young, you know, because I did live near beaches and near islands and stuff like that. So I do know where it comes from. But I never tried to overcome it. Were I to live close to it, I probably would have tried to overcome it. But there's always that thing, you know, there's the giant squid and there's the shark. I mean, there's no sharks. There were no sharks in my waters. But there's that sort of, you know, I did watch, what's it called? Jaws. And Jaws was one of the things that filled me with fear in the ocean. And for quite some time, I'd be swimming in the ocean because I love swimming in the ocean, you know, ride those waves. And I'd be out far enough that I couldn't touch, you know, I would be deep, you know, and far away and people start going small. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, Jaws music would pop into my brain, you know, and I'd be having fun. And then suddenly, that wretched song would appear in my brain. And if you would be sitting on the beach, you'd see this little person behave like an Olympian. Trying to get out of the water. I've been swimming as fast as I could out of the water. And the minute I'd get out of the water, I'd actually laugh at myself because I knew what I'd just done. Yeah. I reacted to a fear that had absolute no reason. But it was something that was implanted into my brain by watching that movie. Because that movie really messed with me. I was very young, I think. I can't remember how old I was, but I was fairly young when I watched that movie. And it truly messed with me. If I watch it now, I kind of think, well, I ain't that bad. And that's not even a real shark. But and sharks don't act that bad. So I give myself reasons like that now. But there are things that get implanted in our brains. Yeah, we do it ourselves, like me, through the film. Others sometimes is you grow up with old folk tales that implant fears, you know, the black cat, you know, and then we go into the superstition fears, yeah, because superstition is, but it's tales, you know, there are stories that put fear into you. So there's the black cat thing, you know, don't want to be crossed by a black cat. And really, nothing wrong with a black cat is going to happen. And if you go back in ages, where does the black cat thing comes from? It comes from being associated with witches. Black cats, you know, they're lovely animals. and so on and so on and so on, because there's so many fears that we have that we don't even know we have. Friday the 13th, people start behaving. I have so many friends, at least one in particular. I've got many friends that really dislike the Friday the 13th. But I got a friend, she will not leave the house on a Friday the 13th. She just will not leave the house. She's terrified of Friday the 13th. And it, how many people get attacked by the Friday the 13th? Probably none. And we were talking about this, and you gave us a good explanation to do with Friday the 13th, which I didn't even know. And, I, you know, if people knew these things, their fear dissolves, because they'll see that there is no reason to hold on to something that does truly not serve you. So what was it? Are you still there?
I'm still there, yeah. Yeah, to worry.
What was it that that you associated Friday the 13th with?
Friday the 13th is a day of betrayal to a certain leadership in the Knights Templar, and the Knights Templar is a as an order. If you look at the Knights Templar, they started off as a group of French monks living in a monastery, and they were ravaged and attacked by the Islamic world, and eventually they started to defend themselves, and as they grew in their ability to defend themselves, they signed up with the Catholic Church as a knightly order, like the Knights Hospitaller and so on, and they grew in power to create a large fighting force that would be on horseback, which is what the term knightly originally meant to be able to be knightly originally meant to be able to fight on horseback. And their power got to a large size because of the mission that they were given by the Catholic Church in the Crusades, and eventually they were betrayed in France by the Catholic Church, and their fraternity was dissolved, and but by then there was many people that joined it that just wanted to join it because it seemed like it had a prestige to it. But if you think about it, that day doesn't really apply to you. You're not in a powerful war machine that's going about creating a project for the Catholic Church to save us all from Islam, and you're not going to be that much interested. You know, the Vatican is less powerful than it was then. I know some people freak out of that, but I'm afraid they have powers, but they're not as powerful as they were then, and they're not going to be interested in you, and they're not going to want to betray you in that way, because you're simply living a totally different life to the Knights Templar. So it could have been any day, really. It's just the day that they were betrayed. It's not the day you'd be betrayed. I suppose it would be like Christians. If they knew the exact day that Christ was betrayed by Judas and handed in, you know, sort of staying locked up indoors under their covers, it'd be a similar kind of silliness if they did that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not directly involving them.
Exactly. But people now have this Friday the 13th fear. They don't even know why. And then there was a film, Friday the 13th as well, that put fear into people. And some associated with that. But really, as you say, if it comes from that, people could put that particular one at rest. and it's really about using your awareness and your knowledge to dissolve some of these fears, because we live with so many fears and phobias that really they do not serve us in any way or format. They truly don't. I mean, why do you have a fear? Go on.
Well, the funny thing is, of course, with that story, is that, of course, there's no misfortune or bad luck involved in it at any point. It's actually betrayal that was being planned. So it's premeditated.
Exactly. And then there's things, for example, the magpie. I don't know where that comes from, but again, I have a friend who used to be terrified every time she'd see one magpie on its own. And then she'd be, oh no, you know, that would ruin her day. Because for her, one magpie would be bad luck, and two magpies would be good luck. Now, the only one that could be bad luck for is actually the magpie, because the magpie, and this is probably where it comes from, only people understand it wrong. The magpie is a beautiful bird. I really like magpies. And they mate for life. So if one of them dies, you know, it's very sad, because then that magpie is alone for the rest of its life. And I think that possibly is where it comes from. But I love magpies. So I actually started telling her every time she went into one, because she did, you know, one magpie. And she tried to look, stop the car. I need to find the other magpie. So eventually I had to say to her, look, you got it wrong. One magpie is luck. Two magpies is lot of luck, or double the luck. And I kept saying that to her. And eventually she actually started accepting that instead of the other belief that she had. So then she'd be like, oh, I seen one magpie, yay! So you can change your life by awareness, you know. And of course, I don't like to see a magpie if it's lost its partner, only because I know it's a sad magpie, because they do mate for life. But sometimes you see one magpie and it's only because the other one is in the bushes or on a tree somewhere, or it's young and it hasn't got a mate yet, so it's not even necessarily a bad thing. So I absolutely love magpies. They're really beautiful. I have a couple of magpies, and I think they've had babies this spring, and they live in my garden, and I love them. I absolutely love them. They do like to steal shiny things. So never put your rings on a table outside if you have magpies. You'll come back and, where's my ring? And it'll be somewhere in a nest.
Well, I would have thought that's why you should see magpies as good luck, because they're probably nicking Lizzie's jewellery and you find it turn up on your doorstep.
Yes.
Finders keepers.
That's probably where some of my crystals have gone. I put them outside to recharge in the sun sometimes, and they disappear. They're all in this beautiful nest made with feathers and moss and crystals. A beautiful magpie nest. But indeed, there are so many, you know, so many fears that people have. Of course, I'm not necessarily touching on some of the phobias. That is a bit different, because sometimes you can have phobias, yeah. It's a different level again of fears, yeah. But these kind of fears, they're not phobias, they're just fears, and they come with a story, and then you believe the story. And because you believe the story, you act out on it and you live it every day. And some people live all their lives with these fears. Oh, there's a cat, got across the road. Oh, there's a magpie. Oh, my day is ruined. You know, Friday the 13th, I can't go out. Etc. Because there are so many at the moment, I cannot think of any other one. But if you can, please do share, because these things are interesting and it's good for people to be aware of them, just so they actually can discard those fears. Hello, Earth to Dean.
Yes, Lizzie. You can discard those fears. The thing I think I have trouble with is phobias, because I do have one phobia. And but having said that, I'm not sure it really affects my life in a massive way. Mm-hmm. I have a few odd behaviours because of the phobia, because I try and keep away from it. But they're not massive life-changing things, so you can kind of live with it, right?
Yes, some of them you can live with them. Others, they can, depending on the person and depending on the phobia, you know, it can overtake someone's life or not.
Yeah, depends what it is. Like people being scared of feathers and balloons, I mean, it's wild.
But it is as wild as anything, you know, because it is still it is a phobia, and most phobias, unless, you know, for example, a spider phobia, arachnophobia, I used to have a bit of fear of the spiders, you know. I have a few stories which I will share with spiders as I was growing up, which, you know, allowed me to have that fear. One was, for example, I think I was, I could have been 14, I'm not sure, but around those ages. But we were working on the house and we had this big water tank that we are making, which is a water tank to feed the house, so the water that goes into the house, but it wasn't totally finished, it didn't have a lid on it, a very big water tank, but like a swimming pool, and it was filled with water. And we were all a bunch of kids, and it was very hot, and we wanted to go and swim in it. Yeah, my mom always used to say no, because that's the water, you know, we use in the kitchen, and so, and then you may do a wee in it, and then you have to drink it. So we were not allowed to swim in it, but it was open. So now and then, without my mom knowing, we'd jump in it. And one morning, my mom wasn't there, and we decided to do so. Now, we jumped in it, you know, we were careful because we knew it was our drinking water. So we actually used to hose our feet and stuff before we'd go in. But we jumped in, and as we were playing, I saw this thing floating towards me. And I actually, to start with, I thought it was a big leaf because there was some trees, yeah. And I thought it was a big leaf. They're very big leaves from this tree, dried leaf coming towards me. And then the leaf started to move. And as I looked, and it was kind of in the water coming towards me, I looked at it. It was one of those, bird-eating spiders, big, you know, hairy ones like a tarantula.
Oh my goodness.
And he was floating towards me with his legs going, and, you know, I think I look like Rocket Man, the way I jumped out of that. Yeah, the way I jumped out of there, I totally scratched my legs coming out of that tank. But it was the way it was floating towards me with its legs still moving. And so I've had a few experiences like that provoked the arachnophobia in me as I grew up. All my sisters jumped out as well and all that.
Not surprised.
I know, she's like really big and hairy. And then after that, of course, you know, any little spider would scare me. It was like ridiculous, but any little spider would scare me for a while. And then as I grew older, I grew with that phobia. But then I got married, I had a child, and it must have been, I don't know, he was a small toddler. He was only just starting to walk, sort of thing. And we were in the garden, and he was playing with the ants, and he was playing with this, and then he picked up a spider. Of course, he wasn't scared, you know, he was just a little kid, and he came to me, with that. And I was just about to go into one. It was one of those, you know, the wolf spiders, garden spiders. They're harmless, but they're big. Yeah, and I was just about to go into one, but something within me said, it's just a wolf spider. It's a garden spider. It's not dangerous. And if you react like that now, he will be scared. So I actually, for a split second, thought that. It was very, very quick thought, very quick thinking and reacting. Because then I held his hand and I said, oh, that's a spider. And he even went to my hand. And within me, I was shuddering. But I held myself for the sake of him, so he would not get the same phobia I had. So he hasn't got spider phobia. And I think solely because I didn't give it to him and he has not had a bad spider happen to him, you know.
Yeah, no experience like that.
Exactly. And because I did that, it also helped me. We'll see everyone after the break. It's been brilliant and it's gone really fast the first hour. I'll see you guys and girls after the break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Broadcasting live from the peak of Mount Warning, the most easterly point of Australia, tune in to the Free Manatee Radio Show with your host, Spread Love, every Monday, 6 a.m. EST. On the show each week, we discuss realistic solutions to help you observe rather than take part in the globalist agenda. We will dig into the past to find solutions for the future. We will discuss the wisdom of Ayurveda, the science of life, for techniques for understanding and achieving personal health and longevity. Please join us every Monday on Studio A, 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Free Manatee Radio broadcast with your host, Spread Love. on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And hello, 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 welcome back. And I have Dean with me today. And so far we covered fear, phobias, reaction that we as humans have with fears and phobias and so on. But both of us were thinking, it is also good to talk about good stuff, not just keep on to the fear. And it's also good to have a look at solutions, at how to move forward, and what kind of stuff sometimes we do to raise our resonance, to raise our vibration, because we are resonant beings, we are vibrational beings, and the resonance we live at is very, very important. So if we always live in fear, we are actually lowest resonance, and it's good to bring ourselves every day upward in the resonance, because it is actually very, very important. If anything, fear keeps us in shackles. Fear keeps us at the mercy of everything that is happening. And getting into going upward in our resonance gives us power, gives us, the joy, the joy for living, rather than being so scared you don't want to live no more. So I thought, Dean actually suggested talk a little bit about hobbies and stuff like that, which I thought is a good idea. Everyone can actually pick up one and do something they like every day. And I know many people disregard such things, and feel as if it's something that is a waste of time, but it isn't. It's a food for the soul, food for your spirit, and it's something that makes you full of joy, happiness, and strengthens you greatly. For example, some people play music, play the guitar, play a violin, and that creativity is strengthening your core. It really, truly, you process so much when you're playing an instrument. Some don't play an instrument, but they like to sing, and that is good too. But there's so many other things. If you're not into music, playing it or singing it, you can place, you know, get some CDs out, and put some good, happy music and dance and sing as you listen. I do. You know, when I'm cleaning the house, I'm dancing and singing. And sometimes it can be a bit funny, actually. If you catch me at it, you probably will laugh. Because I capture myself sometimes in a mirror or so, and it makes me laugh. But it is good stuff for the soul. You can do painting. You can do so many creativity stuff, yeah? I know Dean does some interesting stuff. Do you want to share any of it, Dean? I don't know if you do.
Sure. Well, I guess the thing I was thinking of is that if you've disregarded hobbies, and I see them as very broad hobbies, you don't have to equate hobbies to what discovered talents you have. You can, doing a hobby brings you into the mindset of simply being, enjoying life. It brings wonder to over repetition and perceived drudgery. In the same way as catching a sunset or a sunrise or something out of the norm, something that lifts you up, hobbies can take you into a less passive experience in life that breaks the mundane, breaks the rhythm of government, the workplace. Maybe you live in a country where you don't feel you have many friends and you fit in. Hobbies can take you into an experience away from that where you do fit in. I also recommend socializing over hobbies in the way that playtime with children growing up with their parents is very important, and parents see a lot of positives out of playing with their children. So can be the same with adults, meeting with other like-minded adults. Mm-hmm. A great example of this is if there's a particular hobby and there might be a local club that does that hobby, or it's something you find yourself getting into, whether you're good at it or not. Mm. It can break down barriers of maybe you struggle with conversation because you don't feel you're a good conversationalist, or you feel a bit awkward in groups. Well, when there's a hobby there, you've immediately got a subject that you can fall back on. It moves you away from small talk that might make you feel unsettled or nervous about, because you might associate interaction people with small talk, and that's something that you feel you have to force. And when you've, the moment you feel you're forcing it, the moment you might feel out of place and not wanting to be there. So it gives you these rails to experience life and to find good moments where there wasn't before. So to me, it doesn't really matter what your hobby is, there's always benefit there, pretty much. And I think that there's times where it can bring excitement and bliss that you normally would associate maybe with a vice or something grand that to the general masses, but it doesn't have to be grand. The only thing I would say with hobbies that you have to watch out for is the creation of a impulsive personality where you get addicted to your hobby at such a level that instead of it becoming a joy, you turn it into work.
Mm-hmm.
And it can actually end up stressing you out in the long run.
Yeah.
And you can actually be put off that hobby, and you can lose that hobby when you never needed to.
Yeah.
Because some people might go about that hobby in ways that lessen it. And you don't need to go down that road. There's always, by talking to others about it or finding the exact group that will do the hobby within a reasonable way that you are comfortable with or finding joy out of it, it can be a huge benefit to your life. That's what I think.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, I haven't done it for years, but I used to love playing a variety of games, you know, game consoles, from the Wii games to Nintendo's, etc. Because I been to quite a lot of them, I really got into them. And okay, I did, you know, my day-to-day stuff, work, go to work, do the house, and it would be sort of an evening thing, but it would take all my evenings. And then it did become obituary for me, because even during the day, I was thinking, I got to get that baddie. I gotta get all the way to the, you know, top boss to be able to get to the next level. So the games did stay with me, I suppose, not in a very bad way, to be honest. But yes, it did take over, and for me, it was a big thing. My day would not be fulfilled unless if I played that game. You know, at the end of the day, once everything was done, I would have to play some sort of game, being it whatever, because I had a few favorites, of course. And it depends if you're alone or if you have a group of friends, what kind of game you're going to play as well. So I had a bit of all. And I was quite into the games, all that kind of stuff. But it did bring me joy. It did bring me joy. And it wasn't a negative thing. Eventually, when I became a mom and stuff like that, I had to sort of withdraw a bit, because obviously I couldn't do that continuously. But in general, I think it's good for people to get some sort of a something to do that switches them off from the going to work, the whatever it is that they have to do. Yeah, the cleaning the house, this, that, and the other. Into, as you were saying, the wonder space, yeah. So you become that child, so you can daydream, so you can play, so you can have that joy that actually comes from within. And yes, I did have joy in killing baddies in the game.
Well, that's the thing about hobbies, it's irrational. If you break down what you're enjoying, it would never make sense.
Mm.
But yet it is fun and a sense of wonder to you.
Yeah. It is that way,
isn't it, really?
Personally, I never correlated that with any real life situation. No,
of course not.
So it was basically a game, you know, and that was what it was. But I think
it's a fairy tale where no one real actually gets hurt. People get hurt in your imagination, but no one real is really getting hurt.
Absolutely. And we used to do what's that called? Painting of little characters.
Just to paint miniatures or figurines?
Yeah. Which are Warhammer. And we used to paint lots and lots of those. And that's something that I used to do with my son when he was little. But I've always liked to do arty stuff. So I'd bring him into it. So then it became something that we used to do as mother and child, you know, when he was very little. So he could also learn and expand and teach me as well, actually. He did teach me some stuff, you know, even though he was little.
I would like to bring up as well, and I won't go into detail because I don't know how much you shared, but when you were younger, you would probably be associated from onlookers as someone that was into more mainstream, physical, related, glamorous hobbies. I think this is highlighting the truth of the breadth and depth of just having that wonder. Everything you've mentioned might be associated with a certain personality type or stereotype, but it's not true. It never has been. People that are well-rounded people find joy and wonder in all sorts of things. So don't be afraid to explore all kinds of hobbies. If you think you're not a sporty person, go and hire a rowing boat and row down the river all day. You know, there's always a way to experience it all.
Absolutely. Because, you know, the things I mentioned were things that you do in a home. But I love to, and I used to do when I was younger, I used to go rock climbing and abseiling and did a lot of swimming in the sea and in swimming pools. And I did yoga, gym. So I did the in and the outdoor thing quite a lot. And I love them all to the max.
Really. I think now yoga is something that posers do from LA, isn't it? TikTok and Instagram. Did you see my yoga mat over my shoulder? Did you see it? Look how trendy I am.
Oh, no, I got
Lululemon here.
I suppose when I did a lot of this stuff, it was not trendy.
It wasn't when I was a kid and my parents having lessons.
But I think people shouldn't do something because it's trendy, but because their heart
is in it.
Exactly identifies with it, gives them joy, trendiness. If it's trendy as well, then cool. But, you know.
Doesn't matter, does it? It's not
exactly
what you're
there for. Exactly. It's all about bringing out the joy, bringing out the spark, embracing all of that. Because that resonance is a healing resonance. It actually helps you to heal so many problems instead of staying in the fear zone. Because even the fear zone goes into your workspace, etc., you know, many people go to work, and it's not as if they go to work in fear, but they experience fear at work and even out of work, because they are still thinking about either the bully boss or the bully manager or colleague. And a work experience becomes a nightmare. And when you go home, you need to be able to switch off from that. You need to be able to bring yourself in to the joy point, so you can do some healing without doing anything apart from having joy. It's very, very important. And because the way life has become, the 9-to-5, the struggle for survival, the struggle for making more money to buy the more expensive car, the latest gadget, this, that, and the other, became far more important than having some joy.
Yes.
So people end up working, and then saving money to buy all these things, and in the end, they don't have the time for joy. They don't have the time.
Absolutely. No, I've always thought to myself, how many career men are there out there and career women out there that make loads of money, but they don't fully enjoy the money they've made? You have to ask that question. Do they just convert it into luxury for luxury's sake in an image? Or do they really use the money and spend it on what their being is, what calls them in life?
Absolutely, absolutely. Actually, there is, there used to be not that long ago, someone showed me that, a list of suicides. And that was actually before all this, what is going on. the very high rate of suicides was actually very rich people. Because for them to maintain what they got used to, you know, so that lifestyle, the house, the cars, the maids, the whatever, you know, that is that they have to work hard, and they have to work hard even at looking happy.
Yes.
Because they're not necessarily happy. They don't know if someone likes them because of who they are or what they have. And I've had this conversation with a multimillionaire person I know didn't marry simply because he never knew whether the women in his life loved him for him or for what he could provide. So he had girlfriends, you know, he did have a life, but he refused to marry, even though he wanted to marry and he wanted children. But he refused because he always felt
Doubt and fear.
Yes, absolutely. He had that fear that this is what they want, you know. And I'm not even, you know, a good-looking guy. You know, I just have a lot of money. And yes, to a certain point, the ladies he did have, the choice of ladies he did have were possibly the wrong kind of ladies. I don't know. I never vetted them. I was a very close friend, you know. But I'd obviously said, you know, I didn't, too much, you know. I mean, sometimes you did ask what you think of her and what you think of her, but I, you know, I wouldn't sit down with her. Okay, no. But I understood his fear, and he was a very generous person. Actually, he was very born into that, but he worked actually very hard, and he was a very generous being. But he had absolute fear of giving himself to someone just because of what he had, not because of who he was.
I think another example as well is, you imagine having to do a lot of public speaking in a corporate environment. You have to please everyone when you're speaking and not offend as much as possible. You have to look positive and be interesting when you're talking about uninteresting things. That must put a certain weight on you, where you're wearing a thicker mask than you usually would in a lot of discourse in your life. I mean, even if you're switching off to a certain extent, it must come a time where occasionally it dawns on you that you spent many hours of talking to people through a thicker filter than you probably needed to. How much of you is lost in that process?
Absolutely. So I do think, you know, happiness is something that resides within us, and a bit like fear, to conquer fear in the sense of know thyself, so you know how to use that fear towards your benefit. You also need to embrace joy, and to in the joy part is to actually embrace it and let go. You know, just be with joy. Just be joy. It's not about anything but being that child, but allow your child out and to just be. And for many people, that is actually very, very difficult. But it is a very important thing. And for many people, one of the, you know, one of the reasons that is very difficult is as well due to conditioning, because when we are growing up, again, you know, that's one of the things that gets told to us is stop daydreaming. What are you daydreaming about? Stop it, you know, at school. How many times, I don't know about you, I got told off so many times for daydreaming at school. You know, the teacher was like, blah, 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 blah in the background. And I was staring out of the window into a dream world, totally away. And I could hear blah, 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 blah in the background.
I actually think that's more natural than people realize, because I think your young mind, although it's developing, is actually detecting the emptiness in their words.
And absolutely.
They're teaching you, they're barely teaching you anything that's applied.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And they're hiding so much from you on all the various subjects that allow those pieces to fall into place and be used in a applied practical sense, that you just know it, you detect it.
Yeah,
and the repetition, again, you can sense the unnecessary repetition, everything that they do, and you know it's not for memorization.
Yes. I was one of those daydreamers, and so now and then I only knew he was there when he kind of slapped me around the head a bit after calling my names a few times and me not sort of noticing until he slapped me, and I got, I guess in those days I would actually use the body punishment. Or shout right in my ear, sort of thing. But even at home, you have the, you know, all the ways you're growing up, you know, grow up, and so on. So we are always being told to stop daydreaming. Daydreaming is actually part of our creational being that we are, because we are creational beings. We create. We are creators, and we create through this visualization, to the daydream visualization of things. To create a beautiful table, you have to visualize it. You have to dream it, you know, whilst you're awake, daydream it. So you're sitting down and you're looking this in your mind, you're seeing this, you know, you're daydreaming this table, yeah? Every single detail about it, you know, above and below the legs and how you put it together. And that is a creating mind. And children are very good at that. And children who are allowed to be like that, they actually become big achievers.
Yeah, I know that also people can, if they're daydreaming like that, they can channel it into methodology, approach, order of things you're going to do a task. You can imagine yourself doing something step by step. And you have these ideas that can come flooding into your mind. But absolutely. Having said that, there is an education system that worries about these kind of things, and that is the Finnish education system. And I actually brought that up on one of the other shows on Revolution Radio, Jim Fetcher's show, The Raw Deal. I mentioned that Finland's education system is one of the few on Earth that actually is net positive for an education system, and they also go into the idea of a socially healthy child makes a successful child in the outside world, so that they're happy with their own skin and communicating with other children, and they give them space to breathe in that, and they actually try and control that rather than just letting them run wild and allowing, you know, the sort of bully and popularity race to just swamp everything, you know, take the oxygen out of the room.
So awareness of all of these things that we are talking of, we have been from the first hour, all of the things that we have touched so far are actually very important things to bring into everyone's awareness. People want change, and people need to know that they are the change, you know. And to be that change, you have to bring awareness upwards. You have to step into that awareness. You have to have peace, love, harmony, joy within you. You have to know yourself, yeah, from within outward. Truly, do you do? Knowing your weaknesses, knowing your strengths, all of these things are incredibly, incredibly important. I'm trying not to bring any senseis into this, but any strength, because a lot of people admire the martial artists. I am one of those. But any strength of these people that you see, and I'm not talking about some of those little judo fights that you see, I'm talking about strength of a true sensei, you know, comes from knowing its strengths and its weaknesses and embracing the wholeness of who he is.
A lot of them are like that mindset.
Yes.
I know the guy that taught me, who died, was very much of that mindset.
And therefore, when they move, there's a peace about them, isn't there? Because they know. They just simply know. And it's okay. And you work at, you improve your better side, and you improve your, you know, what you can consider not your better side. But everything is all about learning and improving and moving forward. And at this moment in time, I always say, and I keep saying, know thyself, know that you are the ones you are looking for. But to be that, you have to realize it. And to be that, you have to step out of the fear and do go and pursue some joy. Get a guitar, make some noise. Get some drums, make some noise. if that's what you like, obviously. Or get some painting, or... the nature thing is important. Gardening, that is incredibly important. Daydream a new reality, because we are true creators. We really are. Until we remember who we are, because it's more about remembering than reinventing. It's really truly about remembering what is within us, yeah, through the ions and ions of time, that remembrance, that essence is within us always.
Well, one of the comments I wanted to make actually was some of your activities that you do to chill out, like watch television. Now, that is actually on the surface a very passive activity and can be sort of almost hypnotic, mm-hmm. and you become a bit zombified. You can actually subvert that, and I'll give you two ways that I found that helped me in my life.
Go on.
One is, when I was a kid, I used to watch TV with my parents because they'd have it on, like many other kids in the Western world and probably everywhere now. Mm-hmm. And we would, at times, depending on what the program or show was, be open to chat about it, and it would become some kind of object of conversation, and so we were interacting with it. That I found very healthy compared to just sitting there watching TV on my own. And it also, it subverted programs that were clearly there that would dull my spirits or even would agitate me, but it made it bearable. And you're probably asking, why didn't you do something else? But it was just between the cracks, you know, those moments when you end up watching the TV as a kid with your parents. And then later on, I came to an epiphany with films. I was going to the cinema very occasionally, but I was occasionally watching films on Netflix and various things when that first went streaming.
Yeah,
and I came to a conclusion, mostly because I watched a couple of films that really, really resonated with me when I was in middle school, that we don't actually pick the films we want to see most of the time. And one of the things I'd say that's really helped me is, if you are going to do something passive like watching films or television, if you can, truly pick what you want to see. So what do I mean by that? Going on Netflix and choosing something is not actually picking what you want to see. Be more selective. That's actually why I occasionally buy physical media, a lot of which doesn't appear on these streaming services, because the particular film is held, and that's not always the case, but the particular film is held in high regard, for instance, even if it's an old one. Or it might temporarily appear on one of these streaming services and go. There's a night and day difference between watching a film that's anywhere from a masterpiece or a film of substance than a lot of what is produced, or stuff that's so cynical, it has an agenda, it's following a theme. And you might think, well, isn't this all subjective? But I'm afraid there's a clear, an obvious quality difference in the world, and you'd be fooling yourself if you don't admit to it, especially as an adult now who's experienced Hollywood and media. So choose things you actually want to see, and you'll suddenly realize that even the passive experience is actually very positive, and it stimulates your mind a lot. A good film doesn't make you into a zombie.
No, not at all. I love watching movies, and I like what some people say, that sometimes, you know, violent films or certain films can make you violent. I grew up watching a big variety of films, and apart from Jaws, that did make me a bit scared of water.
It was low-hanging fruit, wasn't it, Jaws, wasn't it?
Yeah. I never became either violent or racist or any kind of stuff through any movie or series that I watched as a kid or even as a grown-up, because I always remain who I am. You know, I can learn something. I can take something if it suits me. But I do. I am a bit like you. I do love my films. I like a bit of action. I like films that have got meaning or that speak to me or the characters speak to me. And I do sometimes like some fact-based films, actually, you know, with a bit of history along there, mm-hmm. you know, because it makes it a bit more interesting. But I do like to sort of bowl of popcorn and just chill out watching. Actually, in the winter, for example, I love if there's like really bad weather and these are long movies and with a nice comfy blanket and some popcorn or whatever choice, whatever I have, just to watch The Lord of the Rings, for example. I love that. On a rainy, miserable day, a few hours of The Lord of the Rings totally satisfies me. And it takes me into that sort of fantasy world that I love. So I do actually like quite a lot of stuff like that. And it brings me into that joy zone as well. I have a tendency to always I become one of the characters as well. that one is me sort of thing. Or sometimes one, sometimes more than one character. I do actually, and I do have, just like I was saying, on a cold winter's night or day, if I don't have anything to do, I can pick on one or two of those films and just back-to-back watch them, you know. They're long, nice, comfy blankets and popcorn, you know, you stop for this, that and the other because they're so long, especially if you watch a couple of them. Because I can, if I don't have anything to do, I can very easily just blend into that and switch off. I totally switch off from whatever is going on out there, whatever is, if I had, you know, work, this, that, the other, I switch totally off and dive into the film zone. As I just said, I can sometimes even pick one or two characters that I like, and that's me. Normally, it's a cool character. a bit like you, I do. And we have very similar taste in quite a lot of films from what we spoke together about. I know a lot of people do tend to always try to depict films and to say always something negative about the creation of films and the films are trying to depict this and...
I think it's pretty clear you can tell which films do that, and that's my point. I think a lot of people have been pretending it's more subjective than it actually is. Mm. Remember, films are engineered by people, script writers and directors and producers. It's not like staring at a abstract piece of art.
Oh yeah, yes. So yes, there is something like that too. Yeah, but some are just like absolutely wonderful to watch, and they may even be telling you stuff.
Yes, and that is perfectly fine. It's more when it gets into the realms of you can tell it's hooking into Hollywood materialism, telling teenagers and college students that they need to hunger after this cliched form of hyper popularity and zero sum game and being noticed. You can see it in you can see that film and television has affected younger generations. I know Willow on the studio was making a passing comment in conversation saying, oh, all the kids seem to just be working out now. But on the surface, that sounds really good because it's just like, oh, yeah, they're being healthy and exercising. But the reality is what's actually under there is its Instagram generation. It's the pursuit of a look. It's that sudden realization that they need to be this high achiever according to the world, not because they want to be achieving a certain thing, but because they just need to be seen as high achiever in brackets.
Yeah, but inadvertently, from films to games to so many different things, you know, even models and sports people and all of those can have an effect on how not just children and adults will follow and, you know, that sort of thing and be suggested by these sort of people and movies and this stuff and the other. And some films and stuff suggest things and show things, what's to come, this, that, and the other. So there's a variety of stuff like that.
To be against a film with a message, though, because that's not what I'm saying. I think
that's clear. Well, I just was including all that into that. But again, all that again goes back into the beginning of the show. Know thyself. Once you know thyself, doesn't mean you're infallible. It just means that your point of view of life and your acting out in life is acting out in life. Yeah, you're living as from the heart rather than reacting in fear. Yeah, like we were talking about the herd, rather than being something you are not because of suggestion, because either peer pressure or this is the latest fad, because a lot of people end up falling for that and they're not happy because they don't get accepted if they're not that. I grew up, I was never any of those things. I was not a mod, I was not a hippie, I was not a geek. I was none. I mean, there's a few other ones, you know, there's quite a few different groups of kids. I was none of them, but I got on with all of them because I was just me. And because I was just me, I could talk to any of them without losing myself and without them seeing me as a threat, because I wasn't one of the other groups. Yeah, I was just that kid that doesn't fit in anywhere. And she doesn't fit in anywhere because she didn't have clothes that were fashionable in one way or, you know, one format or the other.
You weren't wearing a uniform.
Exactly. You know, I just, whatever I wanted to wear, I did. However I wanted to be, I was. And I spoke to any of these groups of people, disregarding any of them saying, oh, you can't talk to this one because they're the mods, you can't talk to that one because they're the punks. Because I was my own person, I could talk to all of them and be just me. Yeah, and I think the best thing for anyone to do is to embrace who they are and just be, and not feel that you have to be conformist to be either a mod or whatever, you know, have a label of some sort necessarily. As long as you are from the heart, as long as you are honest with yourself, as long as you would do the work and know who you are, because that is what we come here to do. At the end of a lifetime, you know, because we are spirit, soul, eternal, living in this body. And at the end of a lifetime, you don't take your fortune, you don't take your very expensive cars or houses. Nothing of that matters. You know, what goes through your thought, what goes through your heart, what goes through your mind, yeah, is what you have or not have done, yeah? Who you have been or not have been, what you could have or not have done, you know? So that is what you take with you. So, and one of the things that we come here to connect with and to be is love, because that is going back to creation, going back to God. Yeah. So we come here, live in separation, to then go back to God, to oneness, to Creator. And therefore, you need to understand and be into the giving and receiving, and no one is lacking. And that goes back into the love, you know, universal love, divine love, and because that is how you go back to God, to oneness, is by remembering who you are and what you are. And that is, you are a unique shard of the divine, having a momentarily moment in a body, experiencing, yeah, stuff. But truly, you are a unique shard of the divine. So once you remember that, then you embrace love, you embrace compassion, you embrace joy, and you embrace who you are and everything else, yeah? And then respect comes in, and love and joy comes in to that. And, you know, everything receives from you, and you receive from everything too. And that moment is a sublime moment of union with God, with oneness. And that is what... in a way, we are doing here without knowing. So many people will take many lifetimes before they realize that. most people, including me, I'm learning. So we are getting very close towards the end of the show. Do you want to add anything to what I was just saying?
No, I think you covered everything off.
Big blanket?
Yes, yeah. That's it. Giant tent.
Well, it has been an absolute... pleasure having you. We covered a few different things. All in all, it is a great big basket full of goodies. And I hope everyone listening in has enjoyed listening. And if it resonates with you, any of you, embrace that. And know that you are a unique shard of the divine, and you are part of love, and you are love. You are loved, indeed. I know many people feel loneliness, but it is but an experience, it is but a feeling. So know anyone out there that you are loved, and always will be. You are listening to Spirit Talk with Lizzie, and today I have Dean with me, and he will join me whenever he wants to and whenever he can, because I love having him with me. It's always good to have a nice conversation with someone, you know, and share whoever we are, and whatever our knowledge and love with all of you. So I do love, thank you, Blessing. Thank you, Arch. Thank you, Dr. Mem Jing, and Willow, and Boy Solomon, Eagle Flower, and every single person that is in the chat room. and everyone that is out there, not in chat room, and is listening, and my heart gives you a big, big embrace, full of love. Dean, do you want to say something as well to the crowd out there?
Thank you very much for supporting the station, because even just listening is supporting the station, because we know that we're valued as hosts out there, because a lot of us, well, most of us are doing this for free, so we're just taking our time to talk with you all. We're not in the business of building anything. A lot of us are volunteers to the work that the management has put together. Yeah, station is theirs, and we just join in the ride with it all.
Absolutely.
So thanks to all your listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you. That's very beautifully said. Thank you, Dean. And yes, I agree with you. Thanks to every single one of you. And we are here for you with love. 24/7, and you are listening to Spirit Talk with Lizzie, and I'll be back on Sunday, Studio B, and I'm terrible with hours and stuff, different time zones, and I think of 1 hour here, and other people are on different time zones, but I will be 11 a.m., Studio B on Sunday with you for an hour, and I'll come back and be on Studio A. I did say Studio B for Sunday. Studio A on Tuesday with you. But, you know, you go up to the nav bar and you see the schedule. You click on that and you see Spirit Talk with Lizzie and many other shows, and you see the days and the times, and go and check. There's so many wonderful wonderful shows. And tomorrow you have Eagle Flower, Conversations with Eagle Flower, and on Thursday you have Not for Public Consumption with wonderful Pat Rabbit, and just after Not for Public Consumption, you have a Willow's World, and I believe just after me we have the wonderful one and only Mr. Rowe. And we love Mr. Rowe, and there are so many shows. So be with us, and we are with you always. Much love. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, great stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern.